Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Assemblyman John McDonald. And Assemblyman McDonald, who is also a pharmacist, is here to talk about heroin addiction and Narcan. Hi, how are you?
Good morning, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, I've been reading and seeing some stuff about Narcan. Can you explain exactly what that is?
So Narcan is the brand name. It's also known as Naloxone, generically. That is a antagonist that blocks the receptor site where codeine and morphine and opioids all stimulate. And therefore, by blocking it, you can stop the effects of those drugs, particularly the euphoric effects.
Now, is there a push to use this particular medication rather than incarceration? Am I correct?
Well, there's a push to use this medication, and it really, let's be clear about this. This is not proactive action, it's reactive. And basically what it's being used for is to basically save lives of individuals who accidentally overdose on opioids or heroin. Now, it should not be confused that we're condoning inappropriate or illegal drug use by any stretch of the imagination, but it's really an indictment on the crisis. The reality is the crisis has reached a level, and it's more of a problem with heroin than it is with prescription opioids, because of the fact that most individuals taking heroin buy it from drug dealers who are not consistent with their supply. And therefore, one, their tolerance builds up, they use more each and every time, but they get an inconsistency, and the tendency to have overdoses is quite high. Narcan works remarkably in reversing the effects of those drugs, particularly the respiratory depression, which leads to the death. And therefore, we are in this quagmire. We don't want our young people dying. And now when I say young, addiction is most prevalent between the ages of 15 and 35. That's where we see the addiction. And now more than ever, it's more women than it is men. And to be honest with you, society is finally starting to realize that drug addiction can happen to anybody. It's not just for the poor. It's not just for the rich. It happens to everybody. And individuals who have lived normal lives, who may start off taking a prescription opioid, can suddenly and quickly become addicted to the medication, and the drug takes over the individual. We've lost the individual. And that's why we're at this point. So, you know, I want to make it clear, because there are a few people who've kind of pushed back and said, well, that's only for drug addicts, and why should we take care of them? The reality is we're all human beings, and we are all susceptible to having drug addiction. All susceptible.
Well, you're talking prescription drugs. I mean, what is the probability of somebody who's taking a prescription drug for whatever reason or whatever pain they have, what's the likelihood that they're going to jump from a prescription drug into heroin?
Here's the first thing. First of all, and I am shocked and amazed when I hear this. First of all, I hear of individuals who take other people's prescriptions. That's totally, one, it's against the law. It's a federal offense. But number two, don't take something that's not prescribed for you. There's a reason why that medication is prescribed for an individual, and it doesn't mean it's prescribed for everybody. But secondly, after you've continued on for 5 or 10 days, once again, taking it maybe not for its prescribed use, taking it because you think you might have pain, for example, it can lead you down to the road of addiction. And the problem happens that there's only, you know, we at the state have put in strong measures over the last several years to reduce the amount of opioids that are available in the mainstream, in the public. And that's a good thing. But what it does is it dries up that supply, And once a person's addicted, they still need to keep going with their addiction. Otherwise, they're going to suffer through withdrawals. The withdrawals are undeniably aggressive, difficult, and therefore people will go to any measure to avoid the addiction and to get themselves, to avoid the withdrawal and to get them back to feeling good. And this is the vicious cycle they get into. They may know the drug's not good for them, the opioid or the heroin. They may know it's not good for them, but the withdrawal makes them feel so bad that they need to continue their addiction to help themselves get back to a state they feel good in. It's a very, very difficult thing.
Now, I've seen and read that even Sheriff Apple has been vigilant on this. How bad is heroin addiction, not only in the Capital District, but throughout the state and the country? Has it proliferated that badly?
It has proliferated. I like to think we're at our peak, but time will only tell if it is. That's the case. And this is why government over the last 3-4 years has been responding to the crisis. And it puts legislatures and executives in very difficult situations because, to a degree, you're beefing up enforcement, but not with the intention of arresting people, but preventing from people from getting themselves an addiction. You are also carefully practicing medicine to a degree because we're starting to put in limits and thresholds of how much medication people can get. And that's always a delicate balance because there's a difference between a person who has an acute injury and has addiction and or develops addiction, and there's a difference between a patient like a cancer patient who has chronic legitimate pain and needs to survive. And we in pharmacy struggle with that regularly, and I as a legislator am very, very cognizant of that as I develop legislation and also as I opine on legislation that my colleagues are putting forward.
I think it's quite ironic that there's been this big controversy over medical marijuana on one hand, but on the other hand, doctors are prescribing heavy-duty opiates that are really not good. I see this whole thing as pretty schizophrenic. Am I right?
There's some points to your argument. It's gotten a little bit out of hand. You know, I go back 20 years ago when patients were suffering in pain and doctors were being encouraged to start to write for pain medication because people were dying painful deaths that were unnecessary. There was therefore, uh-huh. And there was a lot of discussion and a lot of consensus building that we need to be able to treat chronic pain appropriately. But what's happened over the last 20 years is twofold. One is that philosophy has changed, that there's not as much fear of prescribers writing controlled substance prescriptions. But the other dynamic that's been out there that is amazing is that expanded access to health insurance has taken the cost factor out of the equation. I can tell you, I've been practicing pharmacy for 33 years now. I go back 20, 25 years ago, you would tell a patient, oh, by the way, the Percocet's going to cost this. Oh, geez, I can't afford that. Okay, well, why don't we try 3 Advil? And you know what? It worked just fine. And that is part of the recent CDC recommendations that came out that physicians need to go back to the basics on progressing through the obvious thresholds for pain management. Every injury does not necessarily involve an opioid, but it's a long, gradual process. I can tell you that I'm very pleased. The medical society I work with on a regular basis, and I receive their newsletters every week, and they have been partnering with OASIS, the state's agency for alcohol and substance abuse, to produce webinars for physicians to take, to reacquaint themselves with the proper pain management protocols. Unfortunately, sometimes in this managed care, volume-based system, we get prescribers get caught in the vicious cycle of just trying to treat the patient. And the reality is that in some situations they know they can identify when there's an addiction, and sometimes they can't. But the more people have access to the healthcare system now, Cynthia, than ever before. That was an issue. We've expanded access, but with the expansion of access, and I'm not blaming it all on that, but with expanded access, obviously as you grow your pool, you're going to have more outliers, you're going to have more exceptions.
With Narcan, a lot of times somebody might be addicted to heroin, and they're alone or they don't have anybody with them, and they overdose. Well, Narcan is not going to help that person because that person's alone, and they're going to die, you know, needlessly. For people who are addicted, who take the drugs by themselves in the privacy of their own dwelling, what do you do in a case like that?
Well, in some of those situations, individuals might recognize that they are on the verge of an overdose and might have the wherewithal to be able to insert to take a shot of Narcan. So, I mean, otherwise, you know, it is the privacy of a person's own home. It's their personal choice, their personal decision. If they want to try to do, you know, heroin, and that's their decision. And as much as I can tell you why not, you know, things will happen like that. But, you know, there are warning signs as people are moving towards addiction. And if they catch them soon enough, or not too late, I guess would be the expression, you know, they can administer the Narcan themselves and save themselves.
Now, is that law in New York State? Is this a sanctioned drug that people could use?
Well, here in Albany County, and interestingly enough, the day after, both the county executive and Governor Cuomo have made a process available where pharmacies can dispense at a patient or a caregiver's request Narcan without a prescription. There is a training the pharmacists have to go through, so that is being rolled out right now. Not terribly complex, but we need to do it just to make sure they're certified. And they'll be able to provide that to individuals who ask for the Narcan, and they'll be able to pay for it at the pharmacy.
Do you think can Narcan be abused?
Narcan will not be. It will not become an agent of abuse.
Good.
It will not become an agent of abuse. I will tell you some of the drugs used in medication-assisted treatment, like Suboxone. Suboxone has buprenorphine plus also naloxone in it. That drug can be abused, but that's more for ongoing. We're talking about in the instance where there's a recovery that is necessary. Narcan or naloxone, no, it will not become an item of abuse.
So
the patient doesn't feel any euphoria from it. They don't get that feeling they get from heroin because it's blocking the receptors. I know, it's Saturday morning, it's not a good time for a pharmacology lesson, but, you know, knowing the way the drug works, that's the abuse is not the concern with Narcan. The bigger concern, as you might guess, is that life-threatening situation been enough to wake up the patient to look for treatment?
Oh, wow, that's good. So has there been any projections on how many lives will be saved by this medication?
I could not make that estimation. I think one of the things that we will be looking to do is to monitor that going forward and see where we can. You know, I know that a member in the Assembly, and I know Senator Amador here in the Capital Region, actually have a bill to have a Narcan registry so we can actually monitor exactly how many are we using. How many did we sell, and can we do them by county? And if we check it by county, we can actually zone in on where our resources for education and prevention and management should be.
Okay. Now, going on to another topic, I had called your office about doing an interview about what's going on and the legislature this year. So you're more or less halfway through it, or a little less than halfway through it. What is fun and exciting down in the legislature this year, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The budget process is underway. We have dozens of visitors every day, have different advocacy groups. Because this is the time of year you need, if you're not in the game, you're going to be out of the picture. And we're fielding a lot of concerns, a lot of questions. I will say that the controversial items are not as voluminous as they traditionally are. However, at the end of the day, when you're talking about $145 billion in spending, everything's going to be controversial to a certain degree. So we are spending a lot of time with our constituents and our advocacy groups. Under the leadership of Speaker Hasty, we are spending an incredible amount of time and an appropriate amount of time working on our conference's position. We will be... I just sent an email out to my constituents this morning that, March 14th is when we will be approving our One House budget in the Assembly, basically a statement of our ideals. And we've spent the last 49 days since the governor introduced his budget understanding his budget. I've participated in several of the joint Assembly and Senate hearings where we've had agency heads, we've had advocacy groups stating their case for and against things. We have met as a conference in the Assembly majority to argue amongst ourselves of what our priority is going to be, which is good. It's healthy discussion, and it helps us get to an informed decision. And, once March 14th comes, the Senate and the Assembly both will submit their One House bills, and then that kicks off the conference committees where the Senate and the Assembly have table targets of what they can support based on negotiations between the governor and the Assembly and the Senate. So it's going to go quick. I mean, before you know it, it's going to be April 1st. But it's been, it's really one of those things I have to laugh sometimes because, people say, well, you got the whole summer off after, because we're not in session from July to December. And to be honest with you, I find that to be the best time of the year for me because I get to spend more time with my constituents. But that being said, easily 12-hour, 14-hour days every day during the budget cycle. And it will be the same way towards the month of May and June.
Now, do you expect an on-time budget?
I do. Certain. The interesting part will be when. Because we have a very odd year this year. April 1st is a Friday. There's a good chance that we're going to have the budget. There's a potential chance that the Wednesday before Holy Thursday, because we will not meet on Holy Thursday or Good Friday, and obviously not on Easter, that Wednesday we will probably have at least consensus and the final budget bills can be printed and potentially passed in time. But it depends. On the other hand, if we don't have them done by that Wednesday, then we'll probably be back in Albany Easter night or very early the next day because we need to go. We do not want to be doing emergency bills. We want the budget process to go as is.
Now, I'm looking at your newsletter right now, and it says that you will be presenting a heroin and opiate crisis video series. And you're going to do this via email, is that correct?
I am not presenting it. What I'm doing is sharing with my constituents the different series that is part of what we've supported through the budget in the past, which is the heroin and opioid toolkit that OASIS has developed under the governor's direction.
So if somebody does not have internet access, they still see it?
That's a good question. There is information that we can provide to them through the mail to help them with that. But for the most part, a lot of the information now is so available and online. And as all of our public libraries provide access to individuals. But as I always say to my constituents, we still believe in snail mail. If you need something, let us know, and we'll let you know.
Okay.
We'll get it to
you.
So
if somebody does need something via snail mail, how could they reach you? I mean, do you have a mailing list for people who do not have internet access?
We do. We have constituents who have contacted us at our office, 455-4474, 455-4474. And my cell phone is 365-2569.
Okay, great. So I will have you back at the end of the session, and you can talk about how successful the session has been. It was great talking to you today.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. You've been listening to John, Assemblyman John McDonald, and he has been talking about Narcan to help heroin addiction. If you like the show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you have a comment or question, please go hashtag Focus on Albany on Twitter and leave your comments. Thank you, Assemblyman. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.